VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's a very special Saturday morning for many reasons. Mother's Day weekend, TPC Saturday, and one that we'll announce very soon. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
I'm Adam VanWee.
And I'm Craig Beechler.
And that third voice was one of the other reasons this is so special. For the last couple of weeks, we've been saying that Craig would be visiting in studio today. He is essentially a venture capitalist, and I've had a little experience, good and bad, with venture capitalists before. Things seem to be ripe for that nowadays, innovation being what it is. And anybody out there who has either an ingenious side where you're inventing things or has tried to start a business, and by the way, about 67% of Americans believe that they would like to start their own business. Very few know how, and if you all remember my rules of banking, if you go to a bank and say, I need money, you might as well just talk to the wall because you're not going to get it. Hence the VC business, and hence Craig being here, and we will get to all that after the first segment where we will talk about the things that we generally do talk about. But I'd like to welcome everybody, especially if you're from out of town and you just happen to flip the radio over and turn on the show and you're going out to the tournament. Those people, you're welcome. Know that when you get home, you can look us up, and you can always find us on the internet. So we might make some new friends today as people go home after this hour.
And we might see you at the tournament this afternoon.
Yes, there will be a VanWee representative there, younger than I, and he'll be the one drinking beer. Probably the only one, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. I would say he'll be in the VanWee Financial tent, but we haven't pitched it yet, so what can you say? For all the locals, welcome back. Thanks, as always, for being here. And if you're out on the roads, especially headed east today, I can tell you there's a lot more people headed east today than there usually are at this hour of the day.
Just be nice. Remember, they're from out of town. They don't know where they're going.
And you know the national pastime around here, tailgating. That's how the trouble begins. These people won't be going as fast as you are. They won't be switching around lanes, and they don't know what exits they're taking. Cut them some slack because they're coming in with a lot of money, and they're leaving broke. And in between lies us. This is a very good thing for the First Coast area, and I think we should welcome them all and cut them a little slack. Just words of wisdom from having been around here a long, long time. Too long. Anyway, here we are. Mother's Day weekend. I was talking to the real estate people as they were leaving. They had just been talking about Mother's Day, and I pointed out that my youngest daughter's name is Anna Jarvis, who just happens to coincide with the name of the founder. And a couple things that you probably didn't know. She started, the whole concept of Mother's Day started, and it was spelled M-O-T-H-E-R-S apostrophe day to honor mothers everywhere. But she was so dedicated to her own mother and not being a mother herself that she made darn sure by the time Wilson got it implemented, it was Mother's Day, M-O-T-H-E-R apostrophe S, so that it applied to her mother mostly. Well, we don't really take much stock in that. I'll spell it any way I want to spell it from now on. But anyway, our Anna Jarvis has done exactly what Howard was saying. She has given us the gift of her time tomorrow on our way to the tournament, long about, brunch time.
Just the crack of brunch.
Yeah, exactly.
And eggs.
Yeah, like that. So, you can spend some time with your mother. Isn't that wonderful? Get fed, it's even better. All right, this week in the market. Remember a week ago, my comment was, some weeks, all news is bad news.
Yep.
And that was last week. Well, then something happened.
Yeah.
I think it was called a weekend.
I thought about changing the opening music this week to Back in Black.
Yeah, no kidding.
So that's kind of what happened this week. The Dow and the S&P moved back into positive territory for the year on a really strong week of trading. We saw the Dow add 2.3%, the S&P 2.4%, and the NASDAQ, as has been the case all year, led the way at 2.7%. And that brings the NASDAQ to a gain of 7.2% on the year, which is really not bad considering we're not even halfway through. The S&P is now up 3.3% for the year, and the Dow is just positive at 0.5%, so not too bad. After all that volatility we saw in February and March, that kind of went away this week, the VIX dropped below its 200-day moving average, and that happened in a week when the market was climbing, so that's a really bullish sign.
That's the measure of volatility.
On a sector basis, technology is still leading the gains for the year, up almost 10%. Probably the biggest surprise, though, has been energy. Who thought energy would be in second place?
Me. I just predicted it 5 years too early.
Right. It's up more than 6.8% this year to date. Consumer discretionary is up around 6.5%. Well, its sort of redheaded cousin at this point, consumer staples, is by far the worst performing sector, down almost 12.5%. Ouch.
It's getting down into buy territory.
Absolutely. Some of those yields on the bigger companies, Procter & Gamble, are pretty attractive. Today. Yeah.
Yeah, since Craig's from
ironically, Cincinnati, I'll talk about this later, but that's how we met. We were both working there.
And that's how we got talking about P&G last night and the yield on that. The price is getting so low, you can pick up 3.84% yield in P&G.
That's pretty attractive.
That's astounding.
It actually dipped to 4. Yeah. The price went so low, it was above 4.
Well, the trend is still down. I think if you're patient a little bit, you get an even better deal pretty soon.
Yeah, I don't really understand that trading. I guess there's just other things that look more attractive right now.
Yeah, money's got to come from somewhere.
Right.
If you don't have any cash, you got to sell something to buy something.
The other sectors that have been underperforming include telecom, which is down almost 6%, and utilities down 3.6%. So all in all, it's kind of a mixed bag in the S&P, with some sectors really outperforming and some really underperforming, but overall still up for the year at this point. What else is having a big year is commodities. The index is now up 7.7% for the year. Shocking, really. Mm-hmm. Of course, much of that is due to oil, up 18% this year. Natural gas has even gotten some positive momentum lately and is now down just under 2%. It wasn't more than a couple weeks ago. I think it was down about 6% on the year. So pretty good price movement there in just a short amount of time.
Yeah, close to the price I haven't seen in a long time.
We're coming up on our break, but I wanted to get into earnings season, as next week is kind of the unofficial close of it. We've seen more than 2,000 companies report. The beat rate on earnings now stands at just over 68%. Down slightly from last quarter, but still a really good number. And the revenue side, same thing, 71.6%, down slightly from last quarter, but still really strong. And the best news is the forward guidance, overwhelmingly positive. So companies are really bullish on what's going to happen throughout this year and going forward from there. Now, if you watch the news, you would think that that wasn't the case. But if you actually look at the reports, companies are really, really bullish. So that's a great sign for those of you that are bulls on the stock market. The job market, if you're in it right now, the economic data that came out this week could not have been any better for you. The JOLTS report, which is Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, showed a record 6,555,000 open jobs versus an expected 6.1. For the first time ever in history, there is an open job for every unemployed person in the United States.
Wow.
That's crazy, isn't it? Yeah. I thought that was a cool stat.
Yeah. Well, that proves one thing. There is such thing as a full employment index. And what that means is now you're down so far in the job seekers that you're down to the truly unqualified.
Yeah, it's very true, unfortunately. But hopefully that'll mean more wage inflation and people will start making more money.
Speaking of wage inflation, the inflation numbers were just nuts.
They were pretty bad.
It's good or bad? What?
Inflation's always like that, though. Some people love it, some people hate it.
The market hates the concept of deflation. So inflation comes back and they give it a negative. I don't get it. A little bit more after the break and then we'll get into some questions. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanley Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanley.
And I'm Adam Vanley.
And I'm Craig Beechler.
And I just want to make a couple more comments about the economy. The crazy numbers on the CPI, the economic numbers should have all been virtually all positive this week. But for some reason, now that we have inflation, they want more of it instead of less of it. They've wanted more when they were worried about deflation, but now it comes in at 0.2% instead of 0.3%. They call it an economic miss. So it really distorts the figures. But as I was saying to Craig, you know, figures lie and liars figure, so go figure. Anyway, the in order to find unemployment claims this low and this many job openings and so on, you got to go back at least 45 years. Things are good out there. The problem is still labor force participation. People have become so accustomed to not having to look for jobs. Maybe it's because of welfare or the unemployment compensation lasts too long or whatever. But it has actually ticked down each of the last 2 months. Go back to work, people. Right. You can make a lot more money that way.
If you have a job that you hate, go find another one. There's a good chance you can make more money and find something you like to do better.
Take classes online at night, things like that. I mean, this is the time in this cycle when you can improve yourself and mm-hmm. your a lot of your family. Yeah. And trust me, if you get a 30% cut in Social Security in the year 2032, you're going to be darn glad you're putting money away in 2018. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth. All right, now we're going to talk about some truly exciting concepts. Like, what do you do if you need money and the banks turn you down?
Exactly. And you're trying to start a company.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a little bit of a background. Craig is a friend of mine from Cincinnati. We were actually roommates out of college at our first jobs in Procter & Gamble up in that part of the world. And he went in a direction. He actually got into sales and did medical device sales, pharmaceutical sales. And since then,
no, he wasn't a drug dealer.
No, well, just a pusher.
Yeah. He sold rocks on the mean streets of Cincinnati, something
right.
like that.
Right.
But since then, he's actually gone into the world of startups and investing in startups and raising capital for startups. And because in our jobs, that's not something we really get into, but it's an area of finance and investing that is really interesting. Because you get to see some of the newest, brightest people, newest ideas, all the new tech, and basically decide whether or not it's an investable business. And if you put money in it, it's highly risky, but it can also yield huge rewards. It can also lose all your money. But and for that reason, we can't get into it as CFPs. But Craig is becoming somewhat of an expert in it, and he's here today to talk about that process. And if it's something you're interested in, I highly recommend that you call the show and ask him some questions, because he's been doing it now for about five years.
Yeah, about 5 years. We raised our first round in the fall of 2012 for a startup manufacturing company in Cincinnati, which really is a craft brewery, but it's manufacturing in its heart. When you're producing a product with 98-99% water and you have some scalability on a large 240-barrel fermentation tank, and you can get some retail space at Kroger and get it on your local restaurant and bar tap, there are some potential for good margins in there if you have a good story to tell.
That's fantastic. I'd like to find a product that's 98% water I could charge $5 a glass for.
Talk to Howard Schultz at Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, that did answer my first question, which was going to be, are there any areas of the economy outside of tech and medical that are ripe for this kind of thing? So the first example you come up with is in the food and beverage arena.
Yeah, I'm not as big of a fan personally as if food arena, because the cost of goods are so high there. And when we talk about cost of goods, we're just looking at all the inputs and the process to actually make the product.
Right.
So whether it be water or hops or yeast or a piece of beef that you have to buy, that's a commodity that can adjust based on certain whims of the markets. The food and restaurant business is a lot harder, in my opinion, than the manufacturing business.
And you just have to look at the failure rate in the restaurant business. It's the highest, or one of the highest, highest.
Except for flower shops. Okay. Right up there.
But what, you know, what's fascinating is that oftentimes, you know, professional athletes and A or B level stars really like to get in the restaurant business because it's
high profile.
Yeah, it's high profile, but it's such high risk. So
yeah.
That's an area that I generally try to stay away from if I can.
Okay. Is that the only area, or do you have others?
That's, you know, I've met with about 12 entrepreneurs so far this year, and I found one, maybe two deals that myself and our group are interested in.
Okay.
You know, I meet with almost everybody, anybody that reaches out to me.
You really don't exclude anything else?
No, I mean, the area that I consider we specialize in is manufacturing, tech, consumer products. Those areas we tend to have a specialty in, of course, medical device or pharma. I took a seed stage position personally in a company last year with three PhD scientists from the Ohio area with a collective 50 years experience. One of them's a global thought leader in nitric oxide signaling, and I won't get too deep into that. But
let's not.
Wound care and wound healing for diabetic foot ulcers is a massive chunk of the healthcare spend in this country. It's about a $17 billion, with a B as in Bravo, dollar market.
Wow.
And they think they've found a solution for that. But as Steve had alluded to, you know, banks don't take this kind of risk, right? Even true venture capital firms like Sequoia, Andreessen Horowitz, they outsource that risk to the smaller groups like ours, where, you know, we have less capital to work with, so we have to make that work. But we're also more willing to take bigger risks to step in an early stage company and go ahead and write that check. That's the hardest thing. People talk about it a lot, putting that pen to paper, and it sounds interesting, and it's very much in vogue, really in our country and globally for that matter right now. But oftentimes if I meet with someone for the first time who's considering it, I try to determine how serious they are. I call the folks that aren't serious plate lickers. And by plate lickers, I mean they want to come to the meeting at the steakhouse and get a dinner and listen to it and act like they're going to lean in and write a $50,000-$100,000 check. But in reality, when you ask them to put pen to paper, they never do.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I want to back up just a little bit. How did you get into this?
Yeah, it's for me an interesting story, hopefully for the listeners as well. But having spent about a decade in the medical device space, covering the majority of the Midwest from Omaha to West Virginia, from Cleveland to Kentucky, I've been fortunate to work with a lot of really smart people that happen to fall into the interventional cardiology space, the vascular surgery space, and the interventional radiology space. And if you look at that world, if you spend more than a year or two and you don't get kicked out of the hospital, usually you're doing something right. Your physicians trust you implicitly because you are actually, a intellectual assistant in the case. You're obviously not touching patients, but you're an engineer, you're a sales rep, you wear many hats. And it just so happens that out of the 30 or 40 physician subspecialties, those three, two in particular, the vascular surgery and the interventional cardiology, they tend to attract people that are risk takers by nature. They didn't go into, working on cosmetics. They went into a very high risk field to work on people's hearts or recirculate the arteries in your legs. And they also happen to make a really good living, and they deserve every penny of it. They make, usually between $750 and $1.5 a year. So they have the capital. They are what we call in this business an accredited investor, which is an important point for all your listeners. The folks at, Van Wee Financial, you and Steve, what you do is, very important to create and build long-term wealth creation for your clients. What I do is once they have that, they've done the right things, the blocking and tackling, if you would, of saving, maxing out all your tax-deferred vehicles like 401ks, IRAs, Roth, or traditional. I come along and say, hey, you've done all the right things for 20, 25 years. If you and your spouse make $300 a year for 2 years in a row and you have a net worth of $1 million or greater, not including your primary residence, then you are considered by the SEC to be an accredited investor.
Mm-hmm.
And you're willing to take that risk. And this really came about after the 29 crash when the law was passed in 33. They didn't want little old ladies getting taken advantage of.
To lose their entire life savings.
Yeah, so number one, I worked in this space with a lot of smart, risk-taking people who earn a lot of annual capital. Two, they're all accredited by nature, and they're generally pretty good savers. They're risk-takers, and before I collect anyone's capital, I'm always very clear, on the numbers. Like, this is a high-risk business, a high-reward business.
Yeah, for sure.
7 out of 10 are not going to make it past 3 years.
7 out of 10 startups?
Yeah, okay. Right. 2 out of 10 are going to double your money in about 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 out of 10 or less than 10%, are going to be that proverbial unicorn, as people refer to them. Unicorn in Silicon Valley really means $1 billion business or greater.
Okay.
For our purposes today, it's anything that returns 10x on capital.
Okay.
So you put 100,000 in, within 3 to 5 years, you're getting $1 million out.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's a pretty good return, but you also have less than a 10% chance of making that.
So, that's right.
Of course, I think the screening process can probably improve those odds if you're good at it.
None of us sitting in the chair today think we're not good at it.
Of course.
You have to have somewhat of a swagger and ego to do it, but also you've got to be practical and look at the data and know that really your greatest asset, at least for me, what I bring to the table in value is the deal flow. It just so happens in the Cincinnati market, and having lived in that market for so long, I've become you know, I feel safe in saying that I'm pretty much an expert in this particular marketplace. So mm-hmm. if anyone came to me and said, what's going on in Cincinnati, I'm tied in with the accelerators. I'm tied in with other VCs, bigger firms, family offices, and probably I can give you a definition on what the accelerators
are. Yeah, we'll talk about that after the break, but that's interesting because I did want to know how you find the opportunities. I think that's a big thing for anyone looking to invest because you have so many options with your money. How do you find the opportunities, and then how do you pick them?
Yeah, and I always like to stick in some type of sector in which I feel like I have a competitive advantage or a moat, as Mr. Buffett calls it sometimes, where I know the space very well. Mm-hmm. So,
if you're going to make a good decision, you better know something about what you're getting into.
Right.
All right, trivia question quickly. How big is big? The S&P 500 is not the only index Standard & Poor's keep. They also have a mid-cap and a small cap. Small caps, there are 600 rather than 500 stocks in there, but Apple is bigger than all of them put together. So the question is, by how much in billions? Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Craig Beechler.
And we'll get back to Craig in just a moment. But first, this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance, because things are growing out there. Also, the trivia question, which I'll repeat, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. And you will probably get Ken himself. All right, the S&P does several indices of different sizes of stocks. The small stock index for the S&P has 600 entries in it. But one company, Apple, is larger than all 600 put together. Quite a bit larger. My question is, how many billion dollars bigger? And I'll tell you that I'll take the answer, plus or minus 10 billion. That tells you it's a pretty good-sized number, right? All right. Back to the whole study on venture capital and such, I had some other questions, and Adam's got some other questions. One of the things that interested me, because we've got it going on in the Congress right now, I was curious about whether the repeal of Dodd-Frank would change anything in his business, and he says it really not, doesn't think it's an issue. So I got to find a new excuse to support the repeal, obviously.
Whatever you need to do.
There you go. Good morning, Greg.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I'm a small entrepreneur, and I've been working on some prototype things that would, I think, do well in the pet industry. And I'm looking, I've got the prototype, but I'm kind of not sure where to go with it as far as getting manufacturing, places to have it manufactured, whether I do it domestically or overseas, and then marketing the product and things like that. So I don't know what advice you could give somebody like me. I don't know if there are sources that I could reach out to that could kind of shepherd either myself or the project along.
Hey, Greg, I would say not necessarily being intimately familiar with the Southeast Florida market here, or the Northeast, I'm sorry, Jacksonville. I would look to find a local angel group here in Jacksonville. I'm sure you have some. Angel investors are folks that would potentially help capitalize it. Or if you don't really need much capital and they bootstrapped it, we call it, so you built it really all on your own and invested your own money or raised maybe a little bit of money from friends and family, you'd want to find a local attorney in the area who specializes in startups. And one of the best things I can recommend would be that you would pick up a book called Venture Deals. Venture Deals. It's by Brad Feld and Jason Mendelson, both very accomplished folks who helped start this industry back in the 80s and have helped grown it. And Brad himself is a founder of the largest accelerator in the world called Techstars. And does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great. I'll start out with picking up that book and going through that and see where that takes me.
Do you have patents?
So I've worked on getting a patent. I'm debating whether I should take the pending patent route or just going for filing the full, making the full application for a patent. One of the reasons would be is because it gives me some opportunities as far as filing foreign patents. But that gets kind of technical. I've been trying to actually find somebody that can do like 3D
modeling,
like drawings,
right,
and things like that.
Yeah, intellectual property, as Steve mentioned around the question, is dead on. That adds a tremendous amount of value typically to an early stage company. And when you're looking at, you know, raising financing, one of the biggest questions is what's the value of the company? That can always be a sticking point. So if you are able to get a USPO, United States Patent Office, to issue you a patent, that is a big deal to the value of your company. But I will recommend that in the Venture Deals book, they do cover that. And you do want to, it is worth spending the money on a good patent attorney to make sure you're locked up and tight on that.
I understand it's not as expensive as it used to be.
Yeah, I think because of the competition and also even some of the resources online where, you know, you can get that attorney online. I generally wouldn't recommend that for something like this because if you're developing some type of pet industry product, you're going to want to make sure you have everything locked up on that. And you'll want to find someone who's maybe familiar with engineering. They have a law degree. They're obviously in the intellectual property space who best suits your needs. And don't feel bad if you need to interview two or three patent attorneys in the area to see who best fits the needs for your particular startup or product.
Okay.
Yep. I also want to mention there's actually a pretty good startup community within Jacksonville. We have the One Spark Festival, which is a really big deal, all built around that community. I'm not involved with it, but I just did a Google search on Jacksonville Business Accelerator, and the top five hits all seem to be legitimate ones from the city of Jacksonville, and then there looks like there's three or four other incubators that assist people like you with getting products and inventions, turning that into a company. So I would start there and just make some phone calls and see where you can go from there.
Okay, great. Yeah, this has been a great call. I appreciate it.
Wonderful. Well, if you start getting anywhere on this, give us a call. And
let us know.
And if you want to, we'll have you on for another phone call like this and say, I did this and this and this didn't work and this did work. And there are, you always know out there are people listening who are very interested. Most people won't ever call a show like this, but trust me, they're out there and they have the same questions you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and go ahead, Greg. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, you're absolutely right. And I really appreciate your time in this call. And it is exciting because even at my age, I'm about your guys' age, the older guy there. And it's great to know that there's always still opportunity out there in this great nation. You just got to put your head to it.
You're right. There's no substitute for execution. We can talk about it all day, but unless you're out there doing it, getting on the pavement, you are providing the jobs of the future. So we commend you for doing that.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Best Did you want to take a shot at the trivia before you go?
No, I don't. I need to get home. I told my wife I was changing the tire on the car. I'm on the phone with you guys.
Hey, it's almost right. Mother's Take Day. Care, Take Greg. Good care of her.
Follow the dream.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Greg, would you define the term business accelerator for us?
Yeah, good, great question. Accelerator, incubator, as Adam mentioned, somewhat interchangeable, but accelerators have popped up over the country. The most famous one probably that folks could look up would be Y Combinator out in Silicon Valley. That was founded by Paul Graham, Jessica Livingston, Trevor Blackwell, and Bob Morris. And that's a very selective hard accelerator to get in, but there's a couple hundred across the U.S. The one I'm most familiar with, and it's actually received a couple accolades nationally, is the Brandery, which is out of Cincinnati, where the company where Adam and I met, Procter & Gamble, founded in 1837 on the banks of the Ohio, is listed. They are known for, shocker, Brandery, for marketing, right? For finding good consumer product companies. Yep. And what typically happens is they take a cohort or a class of applications. So Brandery will receive hundreds of applications for anywhere from 8 to 12 spots. It varies depending upon the year. And they have some capital, very, very minimal capital. But what they have that's more important to a guy like Greg who just called in, they have amazing deep SMEs, subject matter experts. and marketing and legal, right? Manufacturing. So if Greg needs a manufacturer, he would come to an accelerator, potentially. He would apply to the one that best suits the needs for his particular specialty or field of expertise in the pet world. And then the accelerator would agree to bring him in for it's a 3 month stay in literally in Cincinnati. Usually they have some housing tied in, or it could be, you know, anywhere where the accelerator is located. The accelerator gets a little piece of equity. I think it's usually around 6 to 7%. And then the entrepreneur gets all the available resources you need. So, you know, when you're starting a business, I don't care if you're 20 years old or you're 70 years old, you can do it, but maybe you're not an expert in manufacturing. You don't know if China or the U.S. is best. You're probably not an expert in patent law. You don't know necessarily how to create a website, right? All these things are important. There are different levers you need in your business, and they'll help provide that.
Nice.
Well, that's something I personally have never heard of.
Yeah.
Working with someone on site for a period of time like that. And I love it, because even just starting up the little place that Adam and I did, and having been in that business for a long time, it was an incredibly complicated...
Yeah, I've had to learn a lot about marketing, website design, phone systems, and I mean, just things I never thought of prior to owning my own business.
Yeah, so imagine like these three PhD scientists that we took a position in. They're not web design experts, but in today's world, you have to have a web presence.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And the accelerator allows you for very minimal equity share, you know, equity to get a massive amount of experts and presence in that particular space.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what day it was, but we went from do you have a website to what is your website kind of overnight.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we'll be right back. This is the Vanley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Craig Beechler.
And the trivia question is still out there. The biggest company on the S&P 500 is Apple, and it's bigger than all the 600 little ones by how many billion, plus or minus 10? And by the way, I predict right here and now that very soon Apple will hit the 1 trillion.
The trillion, I agree. They're only 70 billion off or something like that.
And the funk that stock was in has all of a sudden been replaced by a tailwind, and everybody's loving it. It doesn't hurt.
When Warren Buffett makes a comment at this. Yeah.
Sitting here looking at Craig's hat that says Berkshire Hathaway. He became Warren Buffett there for just a minute, because he spent last weekend out at the meeting, as he does every year.
Yes.
That's got to be... It wouldn't hurt to just mention a couple things about that, if you don't mind.
Anyone listening, and I've invited Adam, and I hope he comes next year. It's always the next year. But if you appreciate capitalism and you're a capitalist pig like I am, and you appreciate 150 plus years of wisdom, 165 between the two, Warren's 87, Charlie Munger, his right-hand man, is 91. Of course, what they've built through the acquisition of Berkshire Hathaway, which, if you don't know, was a textile company up in the Northeast for Vermont. And they allow questions from the audience. And my first year there, I asked a question in 2004 in front of 25,000 people. I won't go into that. It's too long of a story for this segment. But they also have a panel of experts like Becky Quick from CNBC, Andrew Ross Sorkin. And it is two men that are incredibly witty, experienced, who absolutely love capitalism, love building businesses, acquiring productive assets. And you get to interact and ask these incredible questions. They're empathetic, they're considerate, they're funny, they're witty, and they sit there and drink Cherry Coke and eat Mama C's peanut brittle.
And they pass out Dairy Queen to everybody?
Yeah, dollar dilly bars.
No, meaning, right? That's worth it alone.
I mean, love it. Yeah, it's please go. Go. You can get in now essentially for a couple $100 just with the Berkshire Baby B. You don't have to spend $300,000 on an A share.
Right.
You know?
Thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's cool. No. All right. Let's get back into this. Adam, you had some more questions, I know.
Yeah. I wanted to get back to how you find the opportunities, because, you know, honestly, thinking about it, okay, so say I'm interested in I have $100,000 and I want to invest it in something, in a new company, but I don't even know where to start to look. How do I do that?
Yeah, that's a very nebulous question, and the answer is even more amorphous. You just have to know the right people. We are what I consider quiet capital. We're quiet. You know, I'm not out. I've never, ever, ever proactively out fundraising.
You're not marketing yourself.
No, it's just, it's through sheer, you know, network and knowing that I like to connect capital to entrepreneurship, capital to opportunity. And part of the reason I'm in this position is, this may sound crazy, but when I was relocated to Cincinnati from the East Coast, I chose to buy an apartment in the city instead of live in the suburbs. And that's where all the action happens in this world. That's where the accelerators blossom. That's where the 20-somethings who are the entrepreneurs or the 50-somethings who are the entrepreneurs want to come and live. And I've integrated myself into the space. And we have some great accelerators in that town, just like a lot of major cities across the U.S. do. And they have a lot of meetings that are open to the public because they want people to come and see what's happening in their town and how they're building the next Procter & Gamble to employ 100,000 people or more globally, right? Mm-hmm. It's all built on the backs of those guys like Greg, who's going to take a risk, but he needs capital to do that. Okay. So the deal flow, Adam, you're really getting at what's the deal flow. Because we have Centrifuge in Cincinnati, we have an accelerator that's predominantly African-American called Hellman. It's run by a woman named Candace and Dahani Jones. I'm tied in with those folks. And so when, for example, there's a gentleman out of Chicago and Cincinnati who is building a software company that's in the medical space, mm-hmm. working with hospital administrators and also device companies like the big names we all know of, like Medtronic and such. He was connected to me through the accelerator when he completed his, you know, course through the accelerator and now has an MVP, minimal viable product, that he can go and present to these companies and hospitals. I got introduced. We've met now 3 or 4 times, and I hope to potentially strike a deal with him in the next few months to raise capital.
Okay.
And that came through an accelerator.
So it really is about who you know. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're not out there, it's something you would almost have to actively seek out as opposed to letting it come to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And just through, you know, call it luck, call it good fortune, the first deal that I orchestrated in the manufacturing world, which was in the fall of 2012, that business opened in the summer of 2013, the Craft Brewery. It ended up being a pretty big success so far. And mm-hmm. They're having their 5-year anniversary next month. And as luck would have it, you know, the physicians I work with are all great people, but we love to talk about stuff like this. It becomes more than a water cooler conversation. It's the backyard barbecue conversation because everyone's got that beer in their hand. Mm-hmm. And other physicians hear about it, and we all suffer somewhat from FOMO, right?
Sure.
Fear of missing out.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, I'm walking through hospitals in my scrubs and doing my thing, you know, and people are stopping me going, hey, are you that guy that got Dr. So-and-so into that deal?
So you became famous in the physician circle.
That might be a little, maybe not famous, but
sorry,
yeah.
The Cincinnati Northern Kentucky physician
circle. Right. Notorious?
Yeah. And B-I-G, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Nice. Okay, so I see how that happens, but so you go out and you find these deals. How do you then evaluate them? Because obviously you're not going to put money into everything that comes across your desk.
No. In fact, over 90%, I meet with the entrepreneur and say thanks, but no thanks.
Okay.
Because it's really, psychologically, it's not much different than dating. And the way that I evaluate these things, the deal that we closed in December was for basically a 20-year-old who I think is the next Mark Zuckerberg. He's got an incredible app. He had 40 million daily impressions hacked into the back of Snapchat. So this is my tech sector, and I believe in this kid. He is working for Apple, as Steve mentioned, that, you know, about to hit $1 trillion, the second company ever to get to probably $1 trillion market cap. He's the next Mark Zuckerberg, and I believe in him. So 35% to 40% of my valuation goes into the entrepreneur. If we write them a check for $200,000 or $2 million, are they going to walk away with my money? I mean, are they going to honestly, right? Like, you have to really trust that person to put pen to paper.
Sure.
So 35 to 40% is on the entrepreneur. The next thing I look at, around 25 to 30% of the weighting, is the space. I mentioned earlier the seed position in the wound healing company. That's a $16 to $17 billion market in the United States. That's a massive amount of open space to potentially capitalize and create a, you know, get part of that pie, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two biggest. So that encompasses 65, 75%. And then there's some of the intangibles. For example, in the manufacturing business we invested in, those two guys, one of them was a SME, a subject matter expert in the brewing world. He had spent over 10 years at great companies. And the other one was a subject matter expert at understanding retail in the Cincinnati market and where to locate real estate-wise and get the biggest bang for your buck. So those intangibles are also important.
So they made a great team together, brought a lot to the table.
They're incredibly bright, incredibly passionate, motivated people who had experience already. Oftentimes, I think during the break, Adam, you had mentioned it may be a good question for the audience about what's the average age of a successful entrepreneur who builds a company that goes 10x.
Yeah, and I just heard this on a podcast this week, and I can't remember which one it was, but I was surprised to learn it was actually 45. The people that get all the press are the 22-year-olds that make it big.
But, and a lot of those guys, and no disrespect, because I have a 20-year-old on the payroll, per se, but a lot of those folks are entrepreneurs, right?
Right.
You hear Cuban say that a lot on Shark Tank.
Yep.
They're not actually out there executing. They want to sit on the laptop at the cool place with the cool shoes and post on Instagram about how cool their life is. But when it comes to actually executing and building a successful company, it comes back to the Antarctica or the iceberg model, right? 90% of that iceberg is underwater. You don't ever see it.
Yeah.
It's all the unglamorous, the late nights, the hard work, the raising the capital, the building the company, the writing the code. It's not pretty or glamorous, but when you get out there and you build a successful company, it feels really, really good.
One thing that I've noticed in just over this hour now, back in the 80s when I was involved in this sort of thing a lot more, we used to call the venture capital people vulture capital, and we did it for a good reason. They would never let you keep a controlling interest in your own product, design, invention, whatever. And I know a lot of things failed to hit the market because I've met with a lot of these people because they wouldn't give up controlling interest. So we always said they'd rather have 100% of nothing than 40% of something, but you don't do that anymore.
No, I mean, there is a joke in the industry, vulture capital, if you've ever heard of that, because they come in and try to take a big piece.
Exactly.
A lot of that's shifting. There's so much money in the dry powder, as we call it, capital in the venture capital space. Guys like me are coming in earlier and doing the seed rounds.
Yeah.
That might be something to talk about next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, we are
it's been fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. That's how quick it goes. Apple Computer, now just Apple, is $78 billion larger in market cap than all of the 600 small companies put together, and they're about to double that. I would bet almost anything that it'll happen, and it'll happen
soon. What's your prediction on when they'll hit a trillion?
In under a month.
A million?
That's what I think, yep. All right, well, thanks, everybody. This was a lot of fun. Thanks, Craig. We'll see you all at the same time next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.